Good afternoon. Thank you once again for joining me. Julian Campbell here. We've got another interesting show, Business, the Law and You, lined up for this week. A bit later in the program, we're going to have a look at a couple of our Harvard Business Review tips. One of them is identify your ideal work rhythm. We're going to have also a chat with Christina with her minute on innovation. We're going to talk about the value of design thinking. But right now, we're going to pop over to have a chat with Kate Toon, who's a copywriter and SEO expert. And we're going to look at do-it-yourself search engine optimization. Good afternoon, Kate.
Hello, lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I believe you're coming up to lovely Newcastle in a few weeks, couple of weeks' time, so we'll have a talk about that. But first of all, I've mentioned search engine optimization or SEO. What is SEO?
Well, SEO is pretty much the process of trying to make Google fall in love with your website. And we all know that Google wants to show us the best content when we do searches. And so it's about trying to make your content come up at the top of the search results.
So what results can businesses expect from focusing on this SEO?
Well, essentially, SEO is free in a way. So unlike paid advertising where you pay your money and you get your click or you do an ad in a newspaper and hope that people will call you, building a site well and having content rank well in the natural search results means that you're getting traffic without having to pay someone to be featured there. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, but you've said it's relatively free, but there are a lot of people out there that charge us an arm and a leg to put search engine optimization on our websites.
Yeah, there are, and that's the thing. It's very difficult because the agencies that offer SEO services are expensive, and it's an ongoing fee to kind of keep yourself at the top of the rankings, you know, anything ranging from $1,000 a month upwards. And also SEO is not just a one-off job, it's every month, forever. Yeah, so it can be pretty pricey for the average small business.
So first of all, we need to put SEO onto our website in the first place?
Yeah, you don't put it on as much as build an SEO-friendly site. So make sure that it's fast, crawlable, that it looks good on lots of different devices, and that you've used the kind of words on your pages that people are going to type into search engines to find your content.
So is it possible then for us to do it ourselves if it's going to be so expensive?
Well, that's my big thing, yes. I think it's very, very possible. Of course, you might not be doing SEO at an advanced level that someone who's been doing it for 20 years might be doing, but most of the sites that I look at haven't even done the basics. They haven't even ticked off the most basic things that Google is looking for, and those things are very, very easy to learn.
So just outline some of those basics for us.
Things like, having a site that runs quickly, so you don't have lots and lots of big images on your site that are kind of slowing it down. Or things like writing content on pages, which actually includes words that people would type in. So often we tend to write business copy in a slightly over-professional, kind of inhuman way, not the way we talk at all. But therefore, the phrases that someone might type in just don't appear on the page. So Google can't connect the dots, if that makes sense. It doesn't understand what your page is about and can't relate it back. A great example is when I worked with the Van Wyck Council and they wanted to call their bins garbage receptacles. And I was like, no one is going to type that into Google hoping to find information about red lid bins. You need to use the phrase red lid bin, you know?
Yeah, and of course, buzzwords that are being used at the moment, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. It's being understanding your customers and understanding what someone would type to find a business like yours. And most often for small businesses, it's generally what you do and where you are. It's not that complicated, but you'd be surprised how many people kind of don't really clearly say what they do and where they are very well on their websites.
Yeah. Well, my opinion actually is that probably about 80% of websites are not very good as marketing tools. They might look pretty, but they're not very effective. And you've mentioned a couple of those things that we can do to help with SEO. What are your thoughts about images? I know you've said fast loading, but it's important also to give image tags and keywords in there too, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I think one important thing is to make sure you upload the images at the correct size and you try and reduce the file size as much as possible. There's lots of tools online called smushing tools that will make the image look exactly the same to the naked eye, but it will be load a lot quicker. And then, naming your images intelligently, so not calling your logo logo.png, but calling it name of your business. .png, you know, CapeTuneCopywriter.png, just simple little things like that all add up, and the little things kind of can make a big difference.
And, of course, more importantly, people upload them from their iPhones or their Androids, and they just have a number on the picture. So you, so many websites I look at, they've just got numbers on all their pictures.
Exactly.
So what would be one tip that you would give small businesses looking to get started with search engine optimization?
I think it's really important to find a source of truth, someone that you can really trust. I see a lot of people on Facebook groups kind of asking for SEO advice, and the problem is that people giving you advice may have an agenda. You know, maybe they want you to use their services, or maybe they're recommending someone genuinely, but they don't understand SEO. So who are they to judge whether this person did a good job or not? Mm. So there are great sites like Moz.com that you can check out, or Search Engine World, where you can really start to kind of get yourself confident and understand just the basics, so that you know when someone's trying to pull the wool over your eyes, as it were.
Mm. And so you're coming to Newcastle on the 4th of July to speak at the Newcastle Business Networking Group in Charlestown there. You're going to be talking, I presume, about do-it-yourself search engine optimization.
Yeah, I'm going to try and kind of make people feel a little bit more confident and demystify it, because there's no magic solution, there's no magic juice that you can put all over your site and it's going to work. It's all actually just following Google's guidelines, which they're honestly quite open about. So, yeah, I want to leave people with some practical tips that they can take home and actually do the next day. That's my goal.
Well, thanks very much for your time, Kate, and we might catch up with you on the 4th of July.
Yeah, hope to see you there.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Kate Toon there, a copywriter and SEO expert. She's coming to Newcastle on the 4th of July to the Newcastle BizNet Working. If you want to find out more details there, they have got a Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/NewcastleBiz Networking. So you can find out more information about the 4th of July. I believe it's about 6:30 in the evening somewhere there in Charlestown. Time to pop over and have a chat with Christina. Good afternoon, Christina.
Good afternoon, Julian. Nice sunny day, even though I know you probably can't see it from where you are.
Well, I can, but it's a bit cloudy out where I'm looking at the moment.
Okay, I'm looking at blue sky. I hope my blue sky comes your way.
Well, let's talk about the value of design thinking. What is it? The history of design thinking.
Yes, but it's both. It has a history and it has definite value. So, and what I'm finding, I'm sure you are as well in your business dealings, is that it is becoming more entrenched, I believe, in our language. And my hope is that it becomes more entrenched in business behaviour. Because I know that you utilise the techniques of design thinking. I run workshops in design thinking and help businesses aspire to the methodologies of that. But I've actually traced it back, and it probably goes even further back than this. I found a book, Design as a Way of Thinking, by Herbert Simon. And that book was published in 1969. So The Sciences of the Artificial and Design Engineering was another book around the topic that was produced by a guy called Robert McKims in 1973. Mm. And then Peter Rowe wrote a book just titled Design Thinking, in which the methodologies and the approaches used by architects and urban planners are outlaid in 1987. So I guess my real interest in design thinking starts with Stanford University, where they started teaching design thinking as a method of creative action in the 80s and the 90s. Mm. It was founded by David Kelly. I know we've discussed David and Tom Kelly before. He founded the consultancy IDEO in 1991, and they've been using design thinking to come up with absolutely remarkable changes, problem-solving techniques, for many, many businesses ever since.
As we said off the air, it's been around for a long time in architecture and engineering, but it's only in recent years that it's crept into business.
Yeah, and thankfully for that as well. Now, you said you were actually given a title around the
value engineer. Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me, yet it surprises me, because I know people don't think of engineers or scientists as being creative, but as we know, they're highly creative, and that they were the proponents of methodologies like design thinking doesn't surprise me at all. But, you know, the thing that is, when I went to the Boston conference this year, there was a whole stream around design thinking. So it's only taken from 1969 to 2017 for us to value the process of design thinking to the point where we have streams of it in conferences like the Boston Innovation Conference. Technology, what's viable, what do humans need? It's the measuring, it's the combining of technology with what is viable and what do, you know, what is it that humans need. So I guess my favourite part of design thinking is that it takes in customer centricity first. Everything needs to come from the perspective of the client.
Mm. So is there a steps that we take in that design thinking process?
Yeah, for me, definitely there is. First of all, you have to identify what the problem is. You have to find the gap in the market. You have to find what it is, the problem that you want to solve. For me, we always talk in terms of flipping it into something more positive. And if I can just give anyone that's listening at the moment a quick exercise to do, when you go, yes, but, which is a response to a problem, yes, but, the whole body for me sinks in. And I've watched people say the words, they kind of sink in, they pull down. When somebody says what if or what's possible, there's an upward movement in the body and there's an upward inflection.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between presenting something as a problem and then presenting it as opportunity. And then I know there's a whole lot of people out there that go, oh, that's hogwash, but for me it works every time. So you identify the problem, you ideate around potential solutions, you then create the prototype, but you make it really an easy prototype and something that's really easy to test. So we say develop a hypothesis around what the problem is and or the solution is, and then go out and test it quickly. What can you test quickly with an easy prototype? You keep changing it until you come up with something that, say, is a minimal viable product or service, and then you act on putting that into production, into service. You test it with a bigger, wider audience. The steps can be repeated for many, many different things, large problems or small problems that turn into, you know, potentially a large problem turns into a really amazing opportunity.
And you've just been talking about body language to that. One of the words, I don't like the word problem. I prefer the word challenge,
exactly.
Because
yeah.
You can overcome challenges, you can't always overcome problems.
I so aspire to that. I think that's absolutely right. That's why we talk in terms of opportunity. So challenge, opportunity, it's that upward inflection, it's that excitement, gets the adrenaline running.
And I think the other thing when you relate to, and well, I'll use the word problem, you've got to solve the right problem, not the perceived problem.
That's right, because we spend a lot of time, and this is one of the other things that design thinking says, is don't assume anything, particularly from the perspective of your client. I know a lot of people go, well, why do I want to pay for somebody to go and talk to my clients or, you know, do that whole discovery process? But that's where the gold is. If you don't start there, then you're making assumptions on their behalf. Everything needs to be customer-centric.
Yeah.
You know that old saying that the customer's always right, that we kind of moved away from and all of a sudden we're coming back to? I'm not sure why we ever moved away from it.
Yeah, and that was muted by Selfridge back in 1927.
Why would a customer keep coming back to you if you're not doing what they want, if you're not servicing their needs, if you're not providing something of quality?
Exactly.
I've never understood that. I mean, the fact that we've mentioned it before, when David Jones when a certain retail company put more people on the floor, their profits
increased.
Went up, because there was customer service happening.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much for your time again. And next week we might have a look at a couple of innovative products.
Oh, and there's some really wild ones out there. Look forward to it.
Okay. Thanks for your time. Have a good week.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. Christina there with, design thinking. Been around for a long, long time, but time for a couple of our Harvard Business Review tips. This particular one, identify your ideal work rhythm. If you dislike having a structured work schedule but find it difficult to maximise productivity without one, it may be time to change the way you think about time management. Consider your unique creative rhythm. How do you work best on a month, weekly or daily basis to help create order and flexibility? Most people have a natural rhythm in which they can accomplish about one major professional project per month. Projects, meetings, commitments can vary week to week, but it's helpful to have a general sense of the weekly cadence that's right for you. The trick is to be honest with yourself about when you do your best focused work. when you prefer to have meetings, when you'll have make space for processing and planning that keeps everything moving. Experiment with your monthly, weekly and daily rhythms to find what's right for you. And this other one, which skill do you want to develop next? Success requires continual growth and learning. But how do you know which development efforts will yield the best return? First, look for the overlap between what your organisation needs and what will give you the most satisfaction. If you're in operations, you might identify several business critical areas for improvement. Say, learning to better manage large customer projects in order to significantly reduce cycle and delivery times. Next, think about whether you can excel at the capabilities you want to develop. If you're already very organised, this bodes well for being able to learn complex project management. Finally, honestly assess how interested you are in the capabilities. The key is to focus on skills that will propel your organisation forward, play to your strengths, and keep you passionate about learning. So a couple of interesting points there. Well, thank you for being with me for the last half hour. I hope you've enjoyed the program. We've looked at do-it-yourself search engine optimization, and it can be expensive, but why not do it yourself? And Kate Toon, of course, we mentioned, is coming to Newcastle in a couple of weeks. And we've also looked at the value of design thinking. In a moment, Jane Klein will be back with you with more of your easy listening favourites. Next week, we're going to have a chat with Matt from Baker Love Lawyers. We're going to talk innovation with Christina and, of course, have some more legal and business views and news that might affect your business. I'd love your company again for Business, the Law and You at the same time next week. Until then, have an exciting and prosperous week. And as someone, that's the anonymous, once said, the ones who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones that do.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care, finance, business and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.